Do people really think we're the enemy?
Depends on which people, I guess. If you only listen to Donald Trump, then yeah, we're the enemy. But if you're for the truth, then we're on your side.
Yeah, that's what journalists are supposed to do. Let you know what's really going on in the world. And not everything's about Trump. The news shouldn't be made around Trump's tweets.
That's why we're doing this podcast, Fariba.
Yeah, but what should we call it, Sean?
Story Hunters
Story
is gone.
Hunters.
Stories from the field. Backstory. The other side.
That sounds like death.
What if you just say fake news?
Fake news. Gaggle. Gagglers?
An informal greeting by the White House press.
What about it's foreign.
It has on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
3, 2, 1. This is Fariba Noah and 3, 2, 1. Welcome to On the Spec.
On Spec.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to On Spec. This is Fariba Noah, your host.
I'm a perennial refugee from Afghanistan. My family fled the Soviet invasion to the San Francisco Bay Area. I was 10 years old, and I still dream of life on an orchard. My native language is Farsi, but I dabble in other languages. I knew I wanted to be a journalist at 12, and I've been trying to figure out the craft ever since. I've been in this for 20 years. I got my start reporting on the front lines of war. When I'm not out chasing stories, my two daughters keep me on my toes, and I'm really excited about this podcast. We've been working on it for a year.
On Spec is a podcast about the news. But it's not like other news, and it's not like other podcasts either. Seems like everyone is starting a podcast these days, and a lot of them are just talk. They don't really take you anywhere.
Then there's the news, which can feel like this endless barrage of information from all over the world. It's easy to feel like we have no connection to something that happens on the other side of the globe.
And that makes it hard for people to see why the news even matters. It's pretty common to hear them say things like, I don't enjoy listening to the news, or the news is always negative. So people are trying to withdraw from the news because they feel like there's nothing they can do to fix that situation. So why bring more grief and misery to themselves by being aware of what's happening in the world?
That's why we decided to do something different. On Spec combines a little bit of both. Reported, fact-checked journalism from the field, but with a personal touch.
As freelancers, we decide what to cover, and we choose to follow stories that our instincts and our passion tell us are important.
And speaking of passionate, I almost forgot to introduce my colleague Sean Carrier. Tell us about yourself. Why did you become a journalist?
In the summer of 2014, I was in Paris, finishing the work on my master's, and I was supposed to be on vacation when I found myself really just unable to pull myself away from the news of the war that was breaking out in Gaza. And what I saw was the way that major news events are being covered is just so politicized and divisive. It really makes us forget that it's people who are at the heart of the story. I felt that journalism, and by telling stories, is the only thing that can bring humanity back into the conversation. So I decided to just get on a plane and go talk to people and try to relay their stories however I could with just a notebook and a Twitter account and an Arabic phrasebook.
Sean and I often discuss the news and our relationship to it, and he's got some very fiery opinions. Sean, why do you think it's so important that people pay attention to the news?
Journalism is in crisis right now. People don't trust the media, and the Trumps of the world thrive on that lack of trust in the media. It's a journalist's job to be a check on power, so of course those people in power prefer for us to be disengaged about the news so that they can keep on doing what they're doing without anybody making it hard for them. At the same time, they tell us that things that happen in another part of the world just have nothing to do with us, and I think that's something we all struggle with as journalists. When we look in the mirror in our more pessimistic moments, we might ask ourselves, is what I'm doing actually reaching anybody? Does it actually matter? Is anybody listening out there? So I see journalism not just as practicing the science of building that trust, but it's a way of resisting that apathetic mentality and saying, you know what? you're wrong. It's not the immigrants coming over the border that are going to destroy our way of life and destroy our economy, but it might be the next war that we get involved in without understanding why or who we are going to war with and who are we really fighting or how wars are fought. That's what might destroy the economy. So I think that doing journalism is asserting that those stories matter and those people matter and they do have something to do with us.
But Omar, if I live in the US, why should I care about what happens in the rest of the world?
A lot of times when I tell people I'm a journalist, they kind of give me a look like, what does journalism matter anymore? Why do we need journalists anymore in the world? But actually, I think without journalism, there's a lot of things that wouldn't happen. For starters, you wouldn't even know what's happening in the world. So all the issues that you care about, all the issues that you're passionate about, all the issues that you end up criticizing journalism for, you wouldn't even be aware of them if it wasn't for journalism to begin with. The United States spent a lot of money since 9/11 trying to hunt down people like Osama bin Laden. And one of the places that this was done was in the tribal areas in Pakistan. There were drone strikes that were happening there. There were on-the-ground military operations. And this went on for 2 decades. It's actually still going on. And we weren't able to solve the problem because we were unable to understand the place and the people and the context of what was happening and the fact that there was no rule of law on the ground and there was really no state on the ground. And without having that, then you can't stabilize an area.
U.S. drone strikes didn't just hit people on a list. They killed locals attending funerals, children at madrasas, shoppers in crowded markets.
For the story for On Spec, I went to the tribal areas in Pakistan where I met people who were just frustrated with how the legal system was working there and the fact that they were being treated legally as not as individuals, but as members of a tribe. And so when one of them committed a crime, the entire tribe would be punished under the law. And this system has an impact on us as well, like as Americans who are thinking about what our country's policy is. And if we're trying to solve a problem in a part of the world, we need to be aware of the fact that we might be propping up a system that creates resentment among the local population, which is what was happening in the tribal areas. Every time there was a U.S. drone strike going after an Al-Qaeda leader there, it had all these consequences for everyone living in that area.
Across the oceans, another multimedia journalist joins our team from the Mexican-American border. She's been reporting on Latin American migration to the U.S. from Arizona. Migration could very well be the story of the century. The rise of populism is driven with leaders like Trump demonizing migrants and Europe deporting refugees. Alisa, what do you think the media gets wrong about the way migration is covered?
So a lot of migration stories we hear about today have to do with war, climate change, and poverty forcing people to move. But the reality is that migration is natural. It's been going on around the world for centuries. I think people hear the word migrant nowadays and have this really intense reaction. And media tends to report on migration by the numbers, the number of people who died trying to cross the Mediterranean, or those who didn't make it across the Sonoran Desert. Those are really important to quantify, but I think it's just as important to dig past those headlines and talk about the people behind them.
And Claudia was not murdered by one rogue agent. Roxana did not die at the hands of one rogue agent. They both died at the hands of a rogue agency.
Amen.
Border Patrol and ICE are both completely out of control and completely at the hands of a white supremacist president.
So it's not just Trump's rise. Media has also played a role in the way people think about migration today. Border cities are full of vibrant and diverse communities, but instead of talking about the resiliency that thrives there, a lot of the coverage focuses on violence. That's part of the story, but it's not all of it, and sometimes it's not there at all. So presenting it like it's the whole picture just serves to add fuel to the anger Trump helped create in the first place. I grew up here in Arizona, and I spent almost 5 years in Amman, Jordan, covering migration, the environment, and human rights. As a reporter, I came up in the Middle East exploring all the ways those things intersect. But Arizona's full of those stories too, and I didn't really look into my home state from that perspective for a long time. So last year I moved back to look at those themes from a new border. I came to Phoenix, the state's capital, and also the place my grandma and mom both were born and raised. It's one of the largest cities in the U.S. and also one of the fastest growing, so migration stories are everywhere. Coming back home was a way to unravel some of that history and see how it informs conversations today.
Oscar Durand is a video and photo journalist, originally from Peru, and he's reported from pretty much every continent of the world, meeting people and telling their stories through pictures. He just got back from a trip to my country, Afghanistan, and we caught up over Skype.
Hey, Oscar.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How was your trip to Kabul?
It was good. It was, it's interesting when you go to a place where many people talk about, I think you built this idea. And then when you are there, you're confronted with reality and then you compare both. So it was a great experience.
I'm excited because you went to a place that I'm from and I can't go back for now. So yeah. What was your initial impression and what was different?
Many things, but again, it reminded me of some parts of Lima, little park and people walking.
Tell me, I'm curious about that. How is Kabul like Lima, which is all across the world? You and I had this conversation on WhatsApp and I was like, well, your country has an ocean and Afghanistan is landlocked. And, there was one poet, I don't remember who said, a country without the sea doesn't smile much, but you saw Afghans smiling, right? What were the similarities between, besides not having the sea, what were the similarities between these two countries?
To begin with, I think it's like visual. There are these minibuses that we call like combis, and it's just the same thing, with the destinations painted on the sides, the minibuses decorated, and someone calling, the door, calling the routes. It sounds something like that. The parks, the way people are socializing. Well, that's kind of like a lot of Lima, a lot of Peru. But what comes to mind is that always people find a way to just continue life. Sometimes I had the impression that everyone is like, hiding, like afraid of bombs, which it is, it's a reality. But also people continue life despite everything.
You sent me a photo of the hillside. The hillside, yeah. And Oscar's smiling big right now. It's nice to see.
Yeah, that was kind of like Lima. And I was showing it to the people that I was with. Like, look at this. And they were like, oh, wow, this is the same. But the difference is that in our hill, we have a big cross on top. So there was no cross. There was just antennas.
Why is it important to do this journalism anymore? Why do you do what you do, Oscar? Why does it matter? You were an engineer once. You could have made a lot more money. And this seems to be a theme with many of us on spec.
Yeah, sometimes I think that I could have been making more money. What I don't have in money, I may not be rich in money, but I'm rich in experiences. I have experienced a lot and I just love it. It's hard to see myself doing anything else. Just the opportunity of spending time with other people, it's just unbelievable. I feel like the luckiest guy ever.
Thank you.
Kabul, our team member Margot Ben is actually based there. She's a French and Canadian multimedia journalist who quit her day job with AFP to go back to freelancing. Margot, a lot of non-Afghans report on my country without understanding many of the nuances or how that story can impact the subject they're writing about. Also, few speak the language, and that leads to a loss of nuance. How have you tried to capture the nuances and avoid the mistakes?
Well, it is common for journalists to parachute briefly in one country after the other, and sometimes they do a really good job that way. But it takes a lot of time and effort and experience to be able to truly understand a place. I came here after having spent the last few years reporting and doing research in East and Central Africa, and then as a video editor of stories from the Middle East and North Africa. So when I came here a year and a half ago, I packed a large dose of humility in my suitcase. So I've been pretty discreet on social media, careful not to broadcast personal opinions on a country that's not mine and on which I don't consider myself an expert. And instead, I focused on writing and filming feature stories and really wrapping my head around this country. And I think the main reason I've been able to do this is precisely because I went back to being a freelancer. As independent journalists, we may not be rich, but we do have the luxury to choose our stories and deadlines to some extent. We can take the initiative and the time to travel all over, chat with strangers, walk around aimlessly, and just take in the environment. And that's how you notice the little scenes and interactions, overhear conversations that might give you story ideas, and you'll be less inclined to go for stories that fall under the same old headlines. Until now, I've been focusing a lot on the conflict and the military and armed groups because it's a theme I've studied academically and worked on as a journalist and researcher in other parts of the world, and which I am passionate about. But I feel that people back home who read news about Afghanistan might have the impression that instead of the conflict being the big story in Afghanistan, it's the only story. And that's not true. So now I'm trying to do stories that allow me to take a step back and give a different perspective. So I've done stories on Kabul's middle-class youth, on sports, I've done a health-related story.
See those cars?
Yeah.
Okay. They're smuggling the people to Iran through Pakistan border.
Europe, go to Europe.
First they go to Iran, then from Iran they will go to Europe.
And I'm really excited about the story I did for On Spec, where I joined some guys looking for artifacts in the desert.
Reporter Pesha Maggi is based in Baghdad, Iraq. She visits Istanbul and breaks, and I caught up with her when she came over to visit me. Pesha, you actually came up with the name On Spec, and we decided to keep it for our podcast. Could you tell us where that came from?
So when you do a story on spec, it means you're doing it without a commission. It means that there's no guarantee of pay. On spec literally means on speculation. When you do that story, you're taking a gamble. You think that the story is good enough that it's worth the risk of not getting paid and of it not even getting out in the world to do it. You're on the ground in a difficult environment. You're talking to people. You're finding out the news, and you're doing it in the old school way, which means, by which I mean that you are physically there. You know, it's not something that you're getting from social media, which is a very valid way of getting news nowadays. But I think that there is something irreplaceable about meeting someone face-to-face and going to the place you're reporting on yourself. I think that it's essential for a good story. And even if you're doing it on a shoestring budget, even if it means that you're sleeping on the floor, sometimes you have to go after the story and you have to figure out what's actually going on. And that's what On Spec means. But it's a gamble that I think as freelancers we've all done and that we all think is worth taking.
Hi, Yuki. Teaching for her. Come on, yeah.
I went to Anbar to talk to truffle hunters who were being targeted by ISIS. This is the sound of a truffle hunter trying to find a truffle in the desert. He's scraping away at the dirt with a metal stick, and he's describing how you search for truffles and how they come out of the sand.
So my name is Pesha Magid. I grew up in the U.S. I grew up all over the U.S. because my past life was as a member of the circus. I did some trapeze with my mom. My dad is a juggler, and that was a part of my life for a very long time. And then I became a journalist, and I moved to Egypt for about 3.5 years and kind of immediately threw myself into this world. The first thing I covered was the coup there. And ever since then, I don't think I there's nothing else I want to do. This is it for me.
And you had a job there in Cairo. You speak Arabic. You were working at an Egyptian newspaper in English and Arabic. Why would you leave a staff salary job to go into freelancing?
Why indeed? Well, I mean, to be fair, Madda Masr, they're an amazing organization. That's where I was working. It's not like they paid a ton. But the other reason is that I just want to have more freedom. I want to be able to experiment more and try new things. I think that freelancing has really allowed me to do that, and it's allowed me to grow in ways that I never even imagined. I get to do long form stories now. I get to go, you know, pretty much wherever I want, as long as I can afford it, and find the stories that I'm really truly passionate about. And I get to do stories that are weird and experimental in form. I combined illustration with journalism for some reporting I did in Georgia. I've learned things I never would have been able to do if I just stayed in a staff job.
Turkish journalist Özge Sebzici and I have gone on adventures working together. Seeing her dedication and talent, I convinced her to join our team.
Yeah, we had our share of adventures. I'm naturally an introvert, but when I picked up the camera a few years ago, it changed me. It was a great way to start talking to people and connect with them. And then I realized, even though people come from very different experiences and backgrounds, if you listen to them carefully, they start to open up. So that's how I found myself in this world of journalism. It gave me a sense of purpose and connection to the world.
Yeah, I've seen you come out of your shell and spread your wings, Özge. What's it like to be a journalist in Turkey, though?
Journalism is under pressure everywhere in the world today. We are living in the fake news era. A lot of people still don't know how news is made. Journalists are supposed to make the news, not be the news. But in Turkey, that's exactly what happened, because every week we hear of a journalist arrested or on trial. Critical thinking is seen as a threat in Turkey, and asking very simple questions, can cause people problems. Of course, there are journalists who are trying to find ways to report the news, and dark humor is a coping mechanism we use.
First season, we'll take you from Turkey to less traveled areas of Iraq, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, and the US. You'll hear from the experts, but also from activists, the perpetrators, and the survivors. We're storytelling, but we also analyze, personalize, and politicize. The show is in English with voiceovers of foreign languages. We welcome different accents. We'll air bi-weekly. And if you like what you hear, keep listening so we can have a second season. Here's a lineup of stories we have in store for you.
This is Omar Farooq reporting from Babi Khaybar, Pakistan, a focal point in the US-led war on terror. Pakistan's tribal areas were once called the most dangerous place on earth. But locals here believe the solution isn't more bombs or drone strikes. but giving them the basic human rights they've been denied for more than a century.
Climate change doesn't only threaten the planet's future. In Iraq, you can see the effects right here and now. With a water crisis spiraling into a political upheaval, I meet activists who say that to save Iraq from ruin, they don't just need to preserve the environment, they need a revolution. I'm Sean Carrier, reporting from Sulaymaniyah, Iraq, on Spec.
I'm Elisa Resnick, reporting from Phoenix, Arizona. Immigration stories here are at the top of the news today, but the thread goes much further back. My story looks at the migrations that shaped this city and what communities are doing now.
My name is Oscar Durand, and I'm doing a story about a Bolivian street musician in Istanbul who wonders where the years have gone and what he'll do with his life.
Because of 40 years of war in Afghanistan, archaeologists can't reach most places. That's left priceless artifacts, some dating back to Alexander the Great, at the mercy of treasure hunters who export them illegally to rich buyers overseas. This is Margot Ben, reporting from Nimruz Province, Afghanistan, on Spec.
I'm Pesha Magid, reporting from Anbar, about the people risking their lives in pursuit of truffles in Iraq's vast western desert, the same area where the last pockets of ISIS remain.
My name is Özge Sebzeci, reporting from Istanbul, Turkey, on how Turkish journalists survive imprisonment and censorship.
Join us in 2 weeks as we take you inside the battle for press freedom in Turkey. This is your host, Fariba Nawa, on Spec, where you can hear stories that bring you closer to the globe. On Spec is produced by a team of independent journalists from around the world. This episode was produced and edited by Sean Carrier and Oscar Durand. Music by Sean Carrier. You can find us on the web at onspec.news. Season 0 of On Spec was produced on spec, meaning out of our own pockets. We're hoping to produce Season 1 with the help of you, our audience. Find us on Kickstarter and donate today to help support our work to continue pursuing independent journalism around the globe.